Okay, human nature has different aspects or dimensions, like body, soul, and spirit. And I'd like to look at these both from the scientific and from a theological viewpoint, trying to find a concordant picture. What does it mean that God did not only create humans, but that he does create each human individual? Different dimensions are clearly distinct, yet they are intimately interconnected. Each of them transcends and pervades the previous ones. Additional dimensions are here represented by the vertical arrows. The dimension labeled chemistry includes all of four-dimensional space-time, or 11-dimensional if you prefer. Biological life is included in the body dimension, and so on. Humans, going from hominids up to Homo sapiens, are higher animals, or living souls, as they are called in scripture. But when a Homo sapiens was created into a biblically real human, it happened through the action of God giving him, creating him in his image. And the biblically human can become a child of God by obtaining spiritual life. Living organisms descend from one or a few original simple living systems by evolution. The strongest evidence for evolution consists of shared errors, such as mobile genetic elements inserted into DNA, which are found in different species in identical places, but which were inactivated before the separation of these two species. Yet, although I believe that there is common descent of all species, it is still unknown whether the Darwinian mechanism is adequate. The origin of life is very far from being formulated into a plausible model. It is premature to call life an emergent property of chemical systems. I expect living systems to have a corresponding chemical description, but whether chemistry can cause life is still speculative. Once living organisms existed, novel functions might conceivably have evolved. But how can novel molecular sequences of minimal functional activity originate spontaneously? Are they accessible through random mutational walks in the huge sequence space? Now I'll try to characterize these transitions which are indicated in this slide. This is a model of behavior of living organisms on the lowest level. Even bacteria react to their environment. This is a model by Mackay, by the way. It's a negative feedback loop with a receptor system, a comparator, comparing the indications of the receptor system with a goal which is given, and an organizer which reacts to that and gives the effector system lets it produce the response which is required. The nervous system of multicellular animals may contain many such loops. In lower animals, and in some systems in higher animals, the behavioral goal is fixed genetically. The organizer operates automatically. For instance, the pupils of our eyes react automatically to the amount of light they receive. On this level, consciousness is not required, even in conscious beings. On a higher level now, some behavior in higher animals is not genetically fixed, but guided internally by a supervisor system, which is adaptive and therefore needs some feed-forward information from the receptor system directly so that it can choose how to react to the comparator's decision. So the supervisor will select from a series of preformed routines, but it is free to select whichever subroutine it wants. We get the impression that higher animals, like we, have a certain freedom of choice. Apparently, emotions like hunger, fear, sexual drive imply some consciousness. These psychological functions might be called soul, as the animals in Genesis 1:20 are called living souls. They are souls, by the way. They don't have souls. Apparently, each psychological state corresponds to a brain state. The soul is embodied in the brain. That doesn't mean it is caused by it. Calling the soul an emergent property of the brain, reducible to brain activity, begs the question. Humans have self-consciousness as distinct from purely emotional or sentient consciousness. Our psychological regulatory system is embedded in a still higher spiritual one, sort of a meta-supervisor, defined by the image of God. It provides us with personality, explicitness, abstract reasoning, symbolic language, conscience, freedom of choice and responsibility, spiritual goals and behavior, the possibility of dialogue with God, which is the most important part of it. The human being is three-dimensional, body, soul, spirit, but still a unitary, indivisible person. Spiritual functions have psychological correlates, and these have correlates in biochemical structures or activities in the brain. But no reductionism is implied or required. It would contradict our personal experience of being responsible free agents. In Genesis 1, we read the verb to create three times. First, in connection with the universe, the heavens and the earth, then with the living souls, the animals, and third, with humans in his image, corresponding to the physical, the sentient, and the spiritual dimensions. In each case, something fundamentally new originated, something that didn't exist before. And between and going through these special events, there was a continuous history of development or evolution. Natural development or evolution, of course, is just as much God's doing as the creative, as specifically creative acts. But on the other hand, we are not only talking about dimensions, but the same thing applies to individuals. In Isaiah 43, we read that every human being is a creation of by God. Each person grows out of a natural conception. In this natural process, God is creating, forming, and making, three terms which are found in Genesis 1 and 2. But why creating if the process is natural? The parameter space involved in which the formational processes occur is trans-astronomically huge. the creator's activity may be modeled as guiding natural development in the physical, sentient, and spiritual realms.